So from that standpoint, now let's look at what a model is in this scenario. So the model does exactly the same thing in exactly the same pattern. So we have our property value. We have our events. We have our methods. And then we have the actual model implementation. Now, the important thing, and this gets implemented here, and then this subscribes to it here. Now, property bags are always optional.
On the model.
Well, actually, anywhere in the system. The view does not have to have a property bag. It could be a dialog box or something like that. It's just some raw data. But everywhere we have a contract, we always use the same pattern everywhere. So there's additional items we add to the contract. So for example, if I'm looking at a window, I have show view as one of the methods automatically built in there. So it automatically pops up, you know what you're getting into and those type of things. But this is always the pattern it follows. So once again, the controller will execute a method, which will kick something off inside the model. A lot of time what we see here is we use a lot of the asynchronous eventing pattern to guarantee that we always come back on the UI thread.
Okay.
So that we don't have an issue with XAML working up on us from the WPF perspective. And then the events will pop back. So.
And these are different contracts.
Yep.
Right.
Each contract is always unique.
Okay.
To the type of model, to the type of view we're plugging into. And the controller always supports those individually. Mm-hmm. Now, makes this more of a hierarchical model is the final contract. There's actually a controller contract that sits on top, which also has a property bag, which also has events, which also has methods. Any controller in the system can be a parent or a child at any given point in time. And like I said before, it's always the child always implements the contract. So if you want to look at this from an actual, more logical perspective, there's the controller, and the view and the model sit below it. And then the controller subscribes to the actual view and to the actual model.
To their contracts.
To their contracts, and any parent controllers talk to these.
Okay.
Now, what's important about this is the views don't, we don't bind views directly together. We actually have to do it through controller contracts.
Okay.
So on every controller contract, there is actually a controlled view property that I can use for data binding purposes and parent controllers.
So there'd be another controller up above that might be controlling a larger process, a wizard process,
yep.
Perhaps, and then calling a controller for particular page in that?
Yeah. So let's take this stock. Now let me kind of do a little high-level overview here.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the implementation of like a stock page.
Okay.
Okay. Seems to be a common example people look at. So the goal is, what we're really trying to do is I want to have a team of developers that concentrate on different parts of the system. So from a stock example, we're going to draw the actual final UI. I may have three objects on it. So the first one, let's say we have some type of search bar. And thank God my usability guys aren't in the room because they would shoot me. So this is actually going to be one complete model view and controller together.
Okay.
And this is a user control. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And here is a details view. This is also another MVC, out of user control. I have a summary that is also another MVC, that's a user control. And then finally, my actual stock window is another MVC. So if we look at it logically, what we end up with is we end up with the parent window that subscribes to the search, to the details, and bind to the summary So when this actually constructs, the window gets built, it then builds out, it then uses IOC, it'll build out the search, the details, and summary. Now, important, we don't tell you how to do that. You can do it however you want. You can use Unity, you can use just straight hard coding, you can use a factory pattern of some flavor, whatever floats your boat. That's more of a architecture, that's architecture dependent, what you're trying to deliver to.
Yeah.
But we just provide the guidance and what you have to build and why.
Okay.
So the important thing behind this is, because the window is subscribing to the child has no idea what its parent has, so it always keeps its scope only to its work. One of the things I see that has bitten us in the past from taking someone else's project, recoding and stuff like that, is if I can see it, I'm going to mess with it.
Yeah.
So everything is scoped.
Right.
So what this does for our developers is they don't think about what's outside their current realm. If it's not in the contract, and this is something we've beaten into our developers' heads very clearly, it's not in the contract, we don't do anything with it.
Okay. So this strikes me as thinking I would have a different feature team for each of these.
You could, absolutely.
Oh, potentially.
They can work completely in isolation almost once the contracts are done.
That's exactly right.
Right.
So the goal is, during our contract negotiation session, what generally ends up happening is we'll take either a series of user stories or use cases depending upon which methodology the client wants us to use, and we'll just do these contract negotiations. They take anywhere from 15 minutes to an hour, generally no more than an hour, and then everyone goes off and does their own thing.
Okay.
And it generally boils down to either two people or three people.
Per feature team?
Per feature team.
Okay.
One new developer, one controller developer, and one model developer, or one new developer and then one combined model developer and controller.
Right. Really depends on what the back end is, what you're helping against. Your model could be very light and basically facade. It really kind of depends on the solution you're going against.
Well, and I think over time, as I've seen, the model tends to get richer and richer through a project, and you're doing less work in the model and more work in the view and the controller.
Right.
Over time.
Right.
Yeah.
And the other important thing the reason why we did this was the maintenance cycle. When we hit bugs, it's real clear exactly where the bug occurred.
Mm.
So, and especially for unit testing. We're able to do a lot of TDD in this environment.
Yeah. So you guys have shipped several products already, projects I should say already, right, with this. Give me an example of some of the stuff you've referenced.
John, why don't you dive into that?
Yeah. Well, some of the ones that I was going to reuse some of your pretty drawings up here in just a minute. A couple of the ones that we've used so far, at least the biggest one that we've done, is a kind of a client management system. It's for a government facility here where we are. What they're doing is there are two basic parts of the application. Of course, there's the client one that sits out on potentially tablets all the way through desktops to servers.
Okay.
And that's where individual people are doing their day-to-day tasks.
So out in the field?
It's out in the field. And what people are doing, and using WPF, we also make sure it leverages the tablets. So different way of entering data.
Okay.
Which is unique all to itself. And then, of course, there's a back-end piece to it, which is managing all the said operations to the client side. It was 17,000 hours to deliver roughly, I think my final count was around 150 screens worth of information through this framework.
Mm-hmm.
And we did it with, the highest count was about 8 developers.
Wow, really? So you got a real productivity boost.
At the high, when we
were... Now, were these all Rockstar developers?
No, they weren't, actually. One time, four, but I had them temporarily. Four of them were juniors.
Okay. So you were able to kind of, they have the raw skills to be a developer. Mm-hmm. You can say, here's your sandbox.
This is where it really, really, this is the separation of concerns. Because what I was able to do is that anybody who's ever architected and built a system for you know, any of your developers that don't have all the context that there is to have. You know, when we sat down, I arranged the teams roughly, you know, sorry, I'm right-handed.
That's okay.
You know, we call them business, but you know, back-end developers, either way.
Okay.
You know, 2 to 3-man teams. Any of these Vue developers here, the only thing they care about is WPF. And via the contract negotiation, that's all they need to know. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's not that I don't want them to know everything else, and it's, you know, to their benefit to teach them over time, life of the project.
Yeah.
But as far as their individual skill set, I can have them work on this.
Narrow all the stuff you need to learn about .NET and tools down to just the WPF, the XAML.
Right. Exactly. And as you know, I mean, using things like Expression Blend and some of that stuff, with, you know, a little bit of knowledge, you can fly. You know, WPF is one of those cool things that, you know, we've noticed that our Vue developers can get ahead of our BAs, which is, you know, 20 years doing this, that's not been my example in the past.
And you have design team as well, team. Where do they live on this?
They over here, they're actually doing design and handing off comps.
Okay.
And some, you know, wireframes and comps that these guys consume, so that's their skill set. And then, of course, our back end is responsible for, in the example that I'm talking about, this was actually two. Business developer, so probably it
followed the pattern.
It followed the pattern. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a controller, and then it was a model.
Okay.
That's really the way it broke out. Is that this one person doing it on here was doing the model for everything.
So what's the net to your customer, though? I mean, were you able to deliver this for X percent less money?
Oh, when we implemented this on this particular project, we gained with the automation, a net 30% velocity pickup.
Was that savings, extra features, the market? What did they do with that 30%?
What they're doing with it is now they're implementing out in the field with everything they want. It's kind of it sounds like a dodge, but we hit every requirement they had.
Yeah.
Okay. And the main savings was really the bottom line, because we could do it with less people faster. Mm-hmm. You know, one particular sprint, because I was running this agile, it was an extended sprint, but I hit 83 screens.
Wow.
So
that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. And well, to be honest, we even shocked ourselves a little bit on that one, because as an architect, you go back and go, should we do your testing? Yes, we did our testing. Really? You know, because that's important. The other one, and so just to highlight this part that we're talking about, this is, you know, Steve's, you know, cleverly, you know, designed stock ticker, but what this did for us is on our admin screen, so on this particular application, you know, we have an admin shell, and we had a bunch of features that admins with appropriate permissions could do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One of the things we did in the admin was client app, and all we did for this entire exercise is we took the Vue, and our controller, subscribed to it, and dropped it in.
So how do they communicate together? Do they communicate up to the parent
controller
of the window back down through?
Yeah.
So that you're basically composing all your Vue together.
And all I did is that there was no extra work, because on the client app, this, you know, the controller for the main screen here, mm-hmm. all we did is made one different, instead of a window, made it a page control, same contract, dropped it, finished. Everything else about the application, because the separation of concerns, rolled right on through the rest and didn't have to do the same thing with it.